Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Talcare Operating Funding 2018-2019 Program Managers. I would like to introduce John Baird. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Fanny, and welcome everyone to our seventh public information session on the Childcare Operating Funding Program contract renewal process and the Childcare Fee Reduction Initiative. Thank you for joining us on what is a beautiful, clear night in Victoria. Today, we have 124 callers from across the province on tonight's teleconference call. In Victoria, we have a team of ministry employees who are here to answer your questions and provide information related to these two initiatives. My name is Jonathan Barry. I'm the Executive Director responsible for childcare programs and services, which includes the CECOF program. Tonight, I'm joined by our Director, Anne Weatherall, of Childcare Programs and Services. I'm also joined by James Baird, who's a staff member here in the Childcare Subsidy Program, and Nayla Moffitt, also from our Childcare Subsidy and CECOF programs. Before I get too far into the agenda, I just want to offer a recognition that for those of us who are here in Victoria, we are on the traditional territory of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations. Just a little about the format tonight, just in case this is your first time joining us. If it's not, it will follow the, you know, similar format that we've had over the previous six sessions, but we'll do an introduction, we'll share some information, and then we'll transition to a Q&A session after about 30 minutes here at the outset. At that time, you'll receive instructions, or if you may have already, to queue up and ask questions of us here in Victoria. We want to get to as many questions as possible, so we'd ask that you please limit yourself to one follow-up. But we don't have as many callers tonight as we have in the past information sessions, so I think we'll try and get to everyone as quickly as possible. So if we can't get to all of your questions, you feel free to jump back in the queue, and we'll try and answer some more. You also may experience, depending on your question, you might sense a bit of a pause or on our end, and that just means that we're conferring with each other to make sure that we give you the most accurate information that we can. As I mentioned, the purpose of tonight's call is to provide information on the 2018-2019 CECOF contract renewal process and the Childcare Fee Reduction Initiative. But before we begin, I just want to start by covering a few items before I turn it over to Anne Weatherall, Director of Childcare Programs and Services. Going back to late last summer and into the fall, the ministry has been talking to parents and childcare providers, early childhood educators, and other members of the childcare sector to hear their views on how we can better support those parts of the sector across BC. In November, the ministry held a two-day forum in Vancouver with childcare providers, educators, and other key stakeholders to get their ideas on how we can achieve government's commitment to affordable, accessible, and quality childcare for all families who want or need it. We also conducted targeted online consultation through the CECOF program. You may have received an email to gather more feedback from providers who were unable to attend the forum in Vancouver. One of the key questions that the ministry and government were asking is, where should we focus in these early days? One of the most important items we heard was that parents are struggling with the cost of care. So in response, government has committed through Budget 18 with two key initiatives. The first one is the transition of the Childcare Subsidy Program into the Affordable Child Care Benefit, which will benefit families with a pre-tax income of up to 111,000 dollars starting in September of 2018. And more information about the changes to that program will be available in the coming months. The other initiative is the Childcare Fee Reduction Initiative, which is linked to the Childcare Operating Funding Program rolling out in April of this year. Through this initiative, the ministry is seeking to partner with providers to provide a universal benefit to families in the form of a fee reduction. This initiative is an optional program for providers who are providing care to children under 36 months and 3 years to kindergarten. Over this past week, we've begun to process return program confirmation forms for those of you who submitted them for nearly 50% of childcare providers who we've issued contracts to this year. And of those, we've processed over 86%. And of those, we've processed, 86% have made the decision to opt into the initiative. So at the moment, a vast majority of childcare providers have chosen to participate in this initiative. As it's rolled out, the ministry has heard and learned a lot about the diversity of childcare providers in terms of their business models and how they deliver services to families. As you are partners in serving families, we've listened to the concerns and recognized that the timelines for this year's contract renewal are somewhat compressed compared to previous years. And it rolls at a time of year when some facilities are closed over the spring break. Therefore, as of yesterday morning, the ministry has made two public commitments. First is we're providing an extension to providers to send in Section 2 of their program confirmation form until April 20th of next month. This will give providers more time to decide if they would like to opt in to the Child Care Fee Reduction Initiative and still receive payments in April to reduce their parent fees. We also recognize that there's not been enough clarity with regard to the daily rate as outlined in Schedule C and the frequently asked questions that have been issued by the ministry. That is why by the end of this week, we will provide written clarification to all CCOP providers on the rates in Schedule C. The intention of this is to provide, and I want to be clear, the intention of this initiative is to provide stable monthly payments to providers to pass on to parents. That is what the ministry is committed to doing and committed to doing for you and for your parents. That sums up my summary tonight. I'm going to pass it over to Anne, our Director of Child Care Programs and Services, who's going to provide a recap of some of this week's updates from the program and also address some of the more recently frequently asked questions.
Thank you, John. And it is a real pleasure, as always, to have a chance to connect with you. We find that on these information sessions, and as John said, this is our seventh, we get fabulous questions, we get fabulous feedback, and, you know, it just enables us to really hear directly from you, our providers, you know, what more you're needing to hear from us. As John also mentioned, yes, we have had very ambitious, very aware there were ambitious timelines for contract renewal this year, and I do thank you for your patience. We've been doing our best to get information out to you, and I'm aware the timelines are tight. We are working on our end around the clock to make sure that we can process all of the forms you've gotten in. I just want to touch briefly on the forms. So like there are many types of child care structures and parent fee types across the province, we know there's no one size fits all. We are also very aware and have been aware that there's no one size fits all computer system or program, and so we've obviously heard a lot of feedback that some folks couldn't open the form, or it wasn't readable, or there were, you know, various other problems. So we have sent out the latest version of the form we sent out on last Friday, and that was a flattened form, which was a printable form, so you could print the form, fill it out, and then either take a picture of it or scan it in and email it back to us. We did also offer in that email for those of you who are simply just unable to access the form to please give us a call. You know, at the program, we have program staff who are ready, willing, and wanting to get your phone call. And what they will do is they will walk you through the form. They will ask you the questions. And then once you tell them the answers, they will email that back to you. And then you can just confirm that the information that we have received from you is accurate, and that you know, that we've captured everything that we needed to get from you for renewal. So hopefully that has helped many of you who were unable to access the forms. We also have heard from some folks that they didn't receive their email at all. What we have done on our end is we have checked our service provider, the portal, if you will, where our emails are heading out in from government into your inbox. And we have heard a few things. So I just wanted to pass this on in case you haven't heard or you haven't been able to access the email with your funding agreement and the program confirmation form. We know that there are some servers that they need to identify a human sender, and ours is coming through a system. And so we know that some email programs identify that as spam. So as much as I don't like to have to tell you to check your spam folders or your trash folders for the emails we're sending you, they may be there. So that may be one way. If you haven't received it, we do ask you to check that. But again, if you have any questions, please call our program. Staff are ready and waiting to answer all your questions. And I'll just reiterate, our phone number is 1-888-338-6622, option 2. So the next thing I want to talk about, John touched on the ambitious timeline. So one of the reasons, so we decided to go paperless this year. We've had a lot of requests over the years of why aren't you paperless, and it takes a long time to send the contract back and forth, et cetera. And so we absolutely were looking at that. We've been looking at that for a couple of years. We sped up that process this year to align with two things. Certainly with the fee reduction initiative, because we are aware that obviously in many facilities, parents pay their fees at the beginning of the month. So we actually wanted to move your ability to receive funding to the beginning of the month. Secondarily, we also wanted to recognize for the base funding that most or many costs that you are incurring as providers with rent and or other costs, also come at the front of the month. So we it's why we chose to move the, in the contract. We moved from actual or after the month enrollment reporting to projected, and so that is the biggest change that we have implemented. And we certainly want to ensure that you can receive your funding up front. One of the pieces with that and the timeline, and we heard this question last night, is how does that work in this transition? So we are aware that April is a bit of a, it's a transition really. And unfortunately, because contracts don't come into place until April 1st, that is when the legal agreement begins for this funding year, and so we weren't able to pay enrollments, base funding or fee reduction funding prior to April 1st. If you look in the FAQs, we did commit to processing your enrollment reports immediately as soon as we receive them on April 1st, and then we will expedite all of those payments and send them out to you in the first 1 to 3 business days. And so I'm not sure if I said this on other calls, but it is business days. So, we are working that the first business day will be April 3rd. So we are working to have all of the payments that are approved through your enrollment reports for base funding, as well as for those who are approved for the child care fee reduction initiative, that those payments will go out as well. So as John mentioned, there is an extension, and we will continue to process those program confirmation forms that we receive after the 27th up until April 20th. We will process them as quickly as we can and ensure that your contract goes into base funding, as well as that you receive a notification that you were approved for the opt-in program, or we will be reaching out to ask for more information. So for those of you who did have your form in by the 27th, which is today, we still have a couple more hours, by the end of the day today, all of those forms we will look to process by the 31st, so that is by Saturday, and so that you will have confirmation that you're in base funding, and then you will have a response for the Child Care Fee Reduction Initiative. So one of the things that one of the questions that we have been asked is, how will I know that you've received my program confirmation form? How you will know is that you will receive an out-of-office reply that your form has been received. So if you receive that hello, thank you, automated response, please know we've received your email. The second question we've been asked is, how will I know that I've been put into base funding? And so the process is the same as last year and the year, you know, all of the years really, is what you will get is an automated email response confirming that you're in base funding. Now, we did hear that some folks are having a little bit of a tough time opening that email, so I apologize if you're one of them. That email does, and we're looking to do a quick fix just to make it a bit easier, but you will get an email that says that you are, looking for it, that you are able to access your enrollment report. So the link to that, the link that is on that email that you receive actually says you are confirmed to be enrolled in CCOS-based funding. So that is the first notification you will receive. The second notification that you'll receive is once we have processed your Section 2 opt-in, Section 2 of the program confirmation form, once we have, once we've received that and we've processed that, you will receive either, you will see, receive an email, and in that email, we will be advising you that your request was approved or if we need further information. And so we, if there's further information, we will work as quickly as we can with you to ensure that we can resolve the need for further information so that then we can move forward with that process. So I'm just checking my... there's a couple of other things I just wanted to touch on that, we've heard a lot about or had a lot of questions on. I just want to move to the CCAP. So we've been hearing feedback and concerns from providers about government putting a CCAP in this program, freezing fees. So I just want to go over how we are assessing the second section of the form when we are asking for your fees. And so we have, and this is outlined in the questions and answers, the frequently asked questions on the website. So what we are doing is we, on section two of the form, we asked for two things. We asked for what your fees were from September 2017 to March 31st, 2019. And so the reason that we asked for those dates was we were looking to have an understanding of the fees within your facility that you charge to parents over this period. And so the reason we were asking for this is we were looking for a sense of the historical pattern of your fee increases. And so there is no fee cap, but the intention of us asking for this information is to ensure that the benefits to parents is not unreasonably diluted by non-standard fee increases. And so what we are doing is we are taking a look at those fees that you've provided to us, and where there is no fee increase over the past 7 months and no planned fee increases, then that is what we're calling scenario one. And that is where we would then move forward and approve you to participate in the fee reduction initiative. The second scenario is where there is a fee increase, but it's a planned fee increase. So it's just part of your normal business. You know, the way that you run your business, you plan your fees. You have every September, for example, you do a small increase or an increase. And then we see that historical pattern, and it aligns with your business practices. And so, we are not, I've heard questions about what's the percentage and all of that. We are looking at your application. I want to say absolutely. I'm trying to think of a better word. But we are looking at what you have written us for your fees over the period of September 2017 to 2019. So we're really trying to establish that. And so when we are taking a look at that, if that is in line with what you've historically done, then, and so that's not an exceptional fee increase, then we would look to, likely, most likely to be approved. So it's the third scenario. What we are still, again, doing is we are looking at your application and where you have implemented fee increases over the past 7 months, or you have plans to implement a fee increase over the course of the contract term, which is not in line with those fee increases that you've done historically, that is where we'll be coming back to you and asking for more information. I know on the program confirmation form, there is a section where you can fill out any additional information. So if you haven't filled out your form, we absolutely encourage you, if you have any information on your fees or anything else, please fill that out. We will, in addition, if we have any extra questions, we will be reaching out for more information. And what we will be looking from you is, looking for from you is, if the fee increase was due to bona fide material, unexpected expenses, or there was some rationale behind that. And we will also be looking regionally if your fee increase is in line, or if your fees are in line with other providers in that area. So I just wanted to talk about that because we've had a lot of questions about a percentage. And I really want to stress that we are looking at your individual application, and we are looking at your fee increases and whether they're planned and they're historical, and, it's just in line with your business practices. So I want to move to a couple of other quick things before we open it up to questions. One of the questions that has come up is the other way that we are assessing applications to the fee reduction initiative. The second way we are looking at it is with closures. And so on the program application form, we did ask you to advise us of any planned closures. And so the key piece of this is that we are looking at closures where parent fees are still charged. So we have in there, and I'm just looking for which question it is.
46.
Thank you. It's question 46 in our FAQs. And so in question 46, what it says is that facilities that are approved to opt in may not close for more than 2 consecutive weeks up to a maximum of 4 weeks in total per year. And then this is the key piece, and charge parents full fees for those weeks in order to be eligible. So the rationale behind this is we absolutely recognize that, especially for our family providers, that of course there are closure periods and there are breaks in service. And so where we have, up to 2 weeks in any 1 month, up to a maximum of 4 weeks, absolutely that would fall within, the initiative. These are planned closures. One of the questions we had, and of course if there are closures that are, over 4 weeks where parents aren't charged, absolutely that falls outside of this. So we understand that programs close for the summer and they don't charge their parents, that absolutely is outside of the 4 weeks maximum. What we are talking about with the closures is that these are planned closures. We absolutely understand that there's unexpected closures that may occur. I think somebody the other day was saying, well, what if I'm sick for a day? We absolutely understand that. Of course, that's a reasonable course of business. And so we are talking about planned closures in the coming months. Just a couple of other things I want to touch on. The intent of this is to reduce, to have stable payments for parents, and also to ensure that we don't add any administrative burden to you. We know that you have a lot to do, and we certainly didn't want to add any additional paperwork with this initiative. And so one of the questions we're receiving a lot of lately is, what else do I have to do if I'm approved for the fee reduction initiative? And the answer to that is nothing. So what you do is you fill out your program confirmation form. You fill out section 2, and that tells us the closure periods, and it also tells us your fees. If you are approved, you have nothing else to do beyond submitting your regular monthly enrollment reports, just as you have done all last year and the other years, because it's the program confirmation form and the enrollment report, which are the two pieces of information that we take to determine the amount that you will be eligible for the Child Care Fee Reduction Initiative. John referenced earlier that we were looking at clarifying in Schedule C in the funding agreement. And so, that's another item that we've had some questions about. And so we put out some FAQs which explain, how that worked. We will be providing written confirmation regarding the rules and payments this week. So I'm just checking my notes here. And the other piece is just with the funding agreement. So, sort of linked in with, we know everyone has enough to do and enough to read. We worked to ensure that the funding agreements didn't change substantively from the funding agreements that you're used to last year and the year before and all of the years before that. So the only changes, the substantive changes or the material changes we made were to add Section 4. We made an amendment in Section 3 to explain or to move to the online process, and we had included the program confirmation form. Section 4 was where we outlined the details on the Child Care Fee Reduction Initiative. And then we also added Schedule C, which lines up with that Section 4 fee initiative. So beyond that, we didn't make substantive changes. There's some wording changes, and we've added about posting those who are approved to participate in the fee reduction initiative. But not too many changes because we didn't, we know it's not everyone enjoys reading their funding agreement, so we didn't want to change it up too much. The last thing I just wanted to touch on is we've had a question, a repeated question about what do I do if a child is in kindergarten? And so with that, very early on, our wording when we first approached this initiative, and we certainly acknowledge that, as we work to get the information out to you, that, we have done what we can to really refine the FAQs to ensure that we're really clear in addressing the questions that we're getting. And so very early versions talked about 0 to 3, and then for infant toddler, and then 3 to 5 years or 30 months to 5 years care. The reason for that is because we are aware that through our, through the data that we have gathered, that those are generally the highest average cost of childcare. And so this initiative is directed at capturing that, this is the first of 3 years of this initiative, and that's why those care categories were targeted. Now, we move to how in this program that our providers, report your monthly enrollment. And monthly enrollment is captured in under 36-month category and 3 years to kindergarten. And so we know and are aware and want to make you aware that any enrollment that is reported in the 3 years to kindergarten category will be captured in this initiative. And so payments will be going out to you for that age category. The last thing I just wanted to touch on is you've got a, well, okay, two last things quickly. So you get questions. The first thing is you were sent an email with a calculator to help you, you know how to make payments. We will be sending, you will receive one payment for your base funding. You will receive a separate payment if you're approved for the child care fee reduction initiative. So with that second payment for the initiative, we sent you out on Friday a calculator. And in that calculator, there's some instructions, and it explains how you reduce parent fees for full-time enrollment. And that's a really easy one because those are the, you know, the standard payments of $350 a month for group under 36 months, et cetera. So those are really easy if you have a parent in 5 days a week full-time care. For the part-time, it's a prorated amount, and that is the reason that we sent you out the calculator. So the calculator is intended for you to be able to go on to input either on a monthly or a weekly basis the schedule of the children who are in your facility. And once you enter that information, the number of days, weekly or monthly, you enter the care type, you enter the age, so the age category, as though you were reporting them on your monthly enrollment report, then you will get an amount, and it's a stable monthly payment that you are to reduce your parent fees by for a child with that schedule. One of the pieces to that is these stable monthly payments are based on stable monthly schedules. So for those, you know, if you have children who come 3 days a week, you know, every week, regardless of the days change, but it's the same amount, that would be a stable monthly fee. Obviously, if you have a child who attends 3 days a week this month, and then the next month it's 2 days a week, you know, that's a different, you know, that's not a stable monthly payment. So that's one of the questions we've had. And I think that might be it. So I think that's it. So I think we should turn it over to questions so I just don't talk the whole night. So I'll turn it back to you, John.
Thank you very much, Fanny. So we're welcome to take questions now.
Perfect. Thank you. So ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to queue up for a question, please press 01. And if you have your name already taken, please don't forget to press 01 to queue back up. Our first question is from Sarah. Please go ahead, Sarah.
Hi. So my question is, on previous calls, we've heard over and over that we're all unique child care centers and that we need to call in to get answers specific to our daycares. My question is when I'm talking to the representative from the agency, I have no reassurance that what they're saying to me is something that I have written confirmation of. So I'm wondering if it's a reasonable request that since I'm basing financial decisions based on some of this information, to request that we have our answers given to us in a follow-up email from the office.
Hi, Sarah. It's Jonathan here. Are you... So in terms of the questions that you have that you want specific answers to, have you written to the ministry and asked for a written response, or are you looking for written responses based on your questions raised on calls like this?
No. So, like, for example, today I called into the center because Anne keeps saying call in. So I called in, and my direct question was, I currently am a for-profit child care center. I am looking at turning nonprofit. So if I close my child care center and we open as a nonprofit society, will you look at the previous history of the prices of the daycare that owned and operated under, you know what I mean, in the same facility? Will you be looking at the past history of those fees? And the agent on the phone today told me no, because it's a new identity and a new society that it would never look at past because it's new. However, I don't want to give that information to a society and a board without having it writing. So I'm looking.
Okay, so I can answer that one. And so with Dan. So and that's a good question. I'm impressed with my staff. They were right. So how it works is, this really is more of a, so it's kind of twofold. So your business is a legal entity, okay? And so our contract is with you as a legal entity. If you disband or dissolve that legal entity, we have no legal relationship with you. If you start a new legal relationship with us, or you start a new legal business, if you will, under some other sole proprietorship or something, that is a legal entity in the way it works. And so you will have to register that company separately. You know, I am not a lawyer. However, that is a separate legal entity. And so they're not linked. That really is a question for BC Corporate Registry. But that's how it works, is we have a legal relationship with you, whatever, and it's exactly why we ask for your organization's legal name. It's why we ask, one of the eligibility requirements is you're standing in BC Corporate Registry. So because it's all based on a legal relationship. So, it's not legally possible that if you have one legal entity and then there's a totally separate legal entity, it's not possible that we would have a legal relationship with you in any way.
But respectfully, my follow-up question would be then, I think that you need to relook at that, and if that's the response, then give it to us in writing, because what's to stop a family child care from being called Tiny Tots today and their sole proprietor, and tomorrow being Fun Ladybugs, and changing their name and being able to increase their fees astronomically because they've changed their identity? I mean, I think it's something that needs to be looked at, and I definitely think we want it in writing before, in my case, I'm willing to go from profit to nonprofit, but I want something in writing that's going to protect us in the future. So I just think it's something that you guys need to consider. But again, I guess back to my original question is, when we're calling into an agent on the line, because it's hard to articulate in emails, what our individual needs are, so they give me an advice on the phone. Can I ask, whatever her name, Sarah on the phone, to send me an email confirming what she's told me?
Sorry, Sarah, could you just repeat that last part? We missed that.
Can the agent on the phone send me a follow-up email to what information she's given me on the phone? So if I get, I talk to her about the details of my specific case, which are often hard to convey in an email. If I say to her, can you email me what you've told me? So I have written confirmation from her about the advice that she's given me, so I have something documented.
So Sarah, I'm just going to advise that what calls that are made into the Seek-Off program, staff there can provide you information about the program. But I think at least one of the questions that you've raised tonight is actually better directed to the BC Corporate Registries. And we can provide you written, in an email, information on how to contact that organization. But that would be outside the bounds of what information the staff in the Seek-Off program could advise you on.
Yeah, and I wasn't meaning that specific. I'm just meaning in general, when they're giving advice to us, to any of us, no matter what it is, can we ask for a written follow-up from them on the advice they've given us?
Sorry, Karen. So there's a couple of things. I think one of the reasons that we're having these calls and that we're putting, as much as we can in the frequently asked questions is, to assist with putting this in writing. Fundamentally, anything that we would say on the phone, staff and myself are absolutely trained to answer these questions. And sort of how some of it works. Fundamentally, our funding agreement with you is the basis for what we are doing. As far as being able to respond with emails, this time, you know, we especially in contract renewal, are under immense timelines to absolutely make sure that we can process as many of your, your funding agreements and answer as many questions as we can. At this time, I simply don't have the staff who would be able to, you know, take telephone calls. Some of our calls are quite lengthy, and then reply in email. We would unfortunately just not be able to process everybody's funding agreements and respond to everybody if we were able to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah. And we have currently about 25 questions in the queue. And once again, if you have your name taken, please press 01 to queue back up. Our next question is from Sherry. Please go ahead.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. One is regarding the approval, and the second one is about the calculator. For the approval, you received a regular CECL. Just wondering, we have to wait for approval, then we can make the announcement to the family, or just we, as soon as we submit the application, then we can make the announcement? This is my first question.
Excellent question. So yes, you do need to wait until you're approved in the initiative, because we have to take a look at your fees and make sure it aligns, etc.
Okay.
But yes, I would, you know, absolutely wait. We are looking to send out, emails by March 31st, so that's by Saturday. And, I do apologize. I know this is ambitious timeline for us all. But we will be looking at sending out emails by then, hopefully before, but certainly by that date.
Okay. And the second question I have is regarding the calculator. Calculator is amazing. It makes our job way easier. But the question I have, because you set up, before you send us for FAQ, for parents FAQ, on the section 42, you set up the chart that it goes by day every month. And then, for example, for May, if I put 19 days for my part-timers, it comes with a different amount than if I put 4 days if I go by weekly. It comes with two different amounts. Which one I have to take? It just goes by days of the per week, or just every month I have to calculate and tell parents exactly how much they have to pay?
Hi there, James here. The best way to determine that amount to pass on to the parent for the child fee reduction is to look at a portion of the whole month. So where we have a child's enrollment averaged over a weekly period or a four-week period, if we look at a weekly, the calculator came out with two different tools. You can use the monthly or the weekly. In the monthly, if a child attends 20 days in a month, you would put 20 into the full days. Or if it's 10 days in a month, you could put 10. Or if a child has a standard weekly enrollment of, say, 2 days a week, you could use the weekly calculator and put 2 into the full days on the weekly. Okay? And it'll determine the amount to pass on as a stable monthly parent fee reduction. Okay? We do understand the payments are different, the daily rates and the payments are different. Written clarification regarding the rates of payments will be provided soon. Okay.
I think one of the big things too with that, with your question is, one of the, so there's two key pieces to this initiative. The first is absolutely stable monthly payments for you to pass through in terms of reduced parent fees monthly, where there is a stable schedule. The second really critical piece is that we've got this calculator, and we understand that, absolutely that you, the provider, must be whole or made whole. And so in no way are we looking to, pass funding through to you to reduce parent fees that would any way, impact your operating funding or the administrative top-up. And so, that which we pass through to you goes to parents. We will certainly not pass any less to you than you were required to pass on to parents. So one of the things is you did reference the rates, you know, the differing rates. What the calculator does is it, you know, as James mentions, it standardizes, if you will, the payments over months over months, and we are accounting in the background for the different, you know, we are aware that on average there's 21 days in a month, you know, on average throughout the year, which is why in the contract we put 1667, because 1667 times 21 days turns out to be 350. Now, we realize, as we mentioned, that we, you know, we actually need to clarify that piece just to make it clear. But we have accounted for the days in the background, and this calculator is your way, or at least, you know, sort of an automated way, if you will, for you to easily determine part-time stable monthly payments.
Okay, so just to make, just I'm trying to clear my mind. So if I have a, if I have child come 4 days a week, a stable days, and there is no, either month goes down to 3 days, 2 days, or what, it's just 4 days, certain days is coming. So can I, from April, can I just say, the weekly calculator, say just 4 days a week for the rest of the year?
Yes, if the child's regular enrollment is 4 days per week, use the weekly calculator, enter a 4, and you'll get 80% of the full monthly rate. So you'll get 4/5 of the full monthly rate.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sherry. And our next question comes from Diane. Please go ahead, Diane.
Hello, Dad.
Hello.
Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hi, Dan. Can you hear us?
Hi. Yep. I just want to confirm, you mentioned earlier in the call that more information will be sent to us regarding the rates of payment.
That's correct. Correct, yes. The ministry will be sending out written confirmation by the end of this week to child care providers to help clarify Schedule C of the contract.
And that will be through email, not posted in the website as an FAQ.
But we will send that directly to you as a child care provider of the CCOF program.
Okay, yeah, that's good to know. And then my second question is, like, if for some reason that's beyond the provider's control, like, let's say the system is down and the payments don't come in on time, or the payments does not match the reduced fee that was given to the parent, is it possible for us to collect from the parents first and then reimburse them the funds when we receive them? This is going forward, like aside from April.
Okay, so you've asked a couple of questions. And so so we understand that, you know, as we move into this, that this is a transition. And so we know that it's not necessarily as, you know, we're not able to give you the funding right up front this month. So, you know, our expectation certainly is not for the first month that you would, you know, have to, you know, jeopardize, you know, your business by not, you know, by reducing parent fees, you know, right away. So we understand that. There are some facilities that are able to do that, and that's great. We also recognize that because we are not able to fund immediately, that there may be a little bit of delay. So we are leaving that for this first month. That is, you know, that is, there is a requirement that the funds that you receive, that they are, that you do pass them on in the form of reduced parent fees. How you do that for the April, you know, that is your business decision between you and parents. It must be passed on, but we realize that the timing isn't perfect. So you had mentioned, you're right, it's only for April, and I just want to reiterate, only because we haven't talked about it on this call, that beginning in May, because you will be able to put in your, what do you call it? No, it's called proposed. Projected, sorry, I keep forgetting that word. Because you can put in projected funding, you can do it any time from April on, you know, April 20th on or May 20th, so you can do it 10 days before the beginning of the month. So So because of that, then the expectation beginning for May is that providers are required to reimburse or to reduce their parent fees. And so it's not reimbursed. You're required to reduce your parent fees by the amount that you've received through the initiative. And so, yes, you will need to do that on the first of the month or whenever you charge your parent fees, whenever they are collected in your facility.
Okay, but if there's for some reason, like, I don't know, say a system-wide glitch and no payments are received by the day that they're supposed to come in, I just want to make sure that I'm covered, like it might be unlikely, but in the event that it happens, will it be okay to collect first?
Well, that's a good question. So the requirement, and I'm not sure if we actually have that clearly enough, and we may look to clarify that. Because we have opened up the requirement to submit, so you will recall with CCOP this year and all the previous years, that we required funding the enrollment reports from the 1st to the 10th after each month. So we have just moved that so that you're able to submit starting the 20th. Our expectation is that if your facility, for some reason unable to carry the reduction yourself, you need to make sure that you have submitted your enrollment report by the 20th or the 21st or early on to ensure that you receive those payments in time. So, we are giving you enough time up front, so we are asking providers to ensure that they leave themselves enough time to make sure that we are able to send the money to them, to expedite those payments out to you to ensure that by the first of the month, if that's when you charge, you have reduced those fees. So, with your response, if you're worried about system glitches or what have you, because we are looking for these payments to be out the door to you in 3 to 5 business days, or actually 1 to 3, certainly initially, you should be able to, we expect that you'll be able to plan in time to ensure that you're reducing fees the first of the month.
Okay, thank you. My last question would be with regards to vacation time, because I know it's passed in the essay that we're allowed only 4 weeks, and you also mentioned it earlier. But what if I've been regularly taking like 2 weeks off in December and then 2 weeks in spring break and 2 weeks in the summertime? So that's a total of 6 weeks, and parents pay the monthly fee for that. I know reduction won't cover beyond 4 weeks, but can I ask the parents to cover the 2 weeks that's not covered by reduction?
It's a good question, and we're absolutely aware that there's different schedules. We are clear that for us, there's a 4 week maximum based on 2 weeks and 2 weeks, or varying schedules up to a maximum of 2 weeks. So in the scenario that you suggested, the key piece and the really key piece is whether or not you're charging parents. And I believe that you said you were for all periods, right? So with regards to the criteria and the eligibility criteria for the initiative, that would be over and above what the policy is for this initiative.
Oh, okay. So I cannot even ask parents to cover the extra 2 weeks, like since they've been doing it since they were enrolled with me?
At this point, so the intent of this initiative is to reduce parent fees, obviously. And we had to draw the line, as far as where sort of what we stipulated for closure periods is that would be beyond. So if you're, if you were going beyond the 4 weeks, then that would not fall within the eligibility for this initiative.
Oh, okay. So that means that if I apply and state that those are my vacation days, I will not likely be approved.
So what I would say, and I know actually we said this in the FAQs, is one of the things that I'm, I hear you. I'm mm-hmm. very cautious to adjudicate over the phone. So I would encourage you, and we are encouraging all providers, if you are interested in this initiative, please fill out the form. Fill it out with the information that you have indicated. It's just section 2 on your form, and when you submit it, I am always reluctant to adjudicate over the phone because, if I were to say things based on verbal versus what is sitting in front of staff, at times it's a different piece. So I would absolutely encourage you to apply if you are interested. Submit the information as it fits for your business. Submit the closure periods as it fits for your business. And then we will take a look at it from there.
Good okay, question. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sonia. Please go ahead, Sonia.
Hi there.
Hi, Sonia. Go ahead.
So I have actually Anne did answer one of my questions. We did get accept for the base funding. We did apply to opt in. So she did mention that once we get the first email, the second, secondly, the email could come or probably we could receive a call from the office. So we are still waiting. Along with me, I have here 4 or 5 more multi-age daycare owners sitting. And so we all did want to opt in, and we did. So we all did receive the base funding, but we are all waiting for the opt-in email or calls. How long do we have to wait for that?
Excellent question. I think I mentioned it earlier, is we will be sending out an email, and we're going to try not to have any links in it. So we're going to send out an email to you absolutely by the 31st of March. We realize that the timelines are tight, and we will look to get them out earlier than that. But yes, you will receive an email certainly by the end of this week.
Okay. My second, very quick second part is we, from the very beginning, and I talk for all the people that are sitting here, is we, from the very beginning of last six, 7 years, we have been operating in this centers for our childcare. We have been keeping our fees really low, especially for infant toddler, just to attract families and low-income families to help the community and the parents. We go out of the way to help the parents. We do pick-up and drop-off service at no cost as well, from home to home. But we are still like underpaid within our community. If you compare different daycares around us, for example, somebody is charging $1,200 for an infant, and we are only charging $900. So we have all increased our fees starting April partially, and again, we'll be increasing our fees in September. We do fall in the third category. We all know that, but in the third bucket. But we, even though after increasing our fees twice a year, in the upcoming year, this year, we are still below in our community comparing to other daycares. So what happens in this scenario? Do we still have to prove all the other things, or we will still opt in? We can still get a clear tip in opting in this program. And I talk for everybody here because, yeah.
Okay. There's a bunch of you here.
This morning, and the line was so busy, and I know this is like a one-to-one personal question, and we all were trying, and nobody was able to get in today. Because we were waiting on the call or something from the ministry to let us know if we are opting in or there are some questions. So I thought I'd just call and speak with you here.
I know, and thank you. I know that we were looking at certainly our call volume today. We were aware they'd be a little bit higher, and I knew they were about sometimes 10 to 20 minutes, and so I'm anyway, it is one of the reasons that, you know, today was supposed to be the last day to opt in for us to be able to adjudicate for April 1st. Part of the reason why we extended the deadline to April 20th, just because we know with some of the forms or with, you know, all of the interest in, you know, in the program that we wanted to ensure that we made time for that. With regards to your other question, I'm careful to adjudicate over the phone or to assess over the phone. However, there is no fee cap. If you are saying that you haven't raised fees or whatever it is, what we do is we look at your historical patterns.
Yeah.
So, and you're saying that, you know, that you fall outside of that, and historically it will show that you haven't increased your fees. It will show that you've increased them by April 1st. And so thank you, because it sounds like you've read your FAQs. It does fall under the third scenario. What we will be looking at is we will be looking at your facility. We will be looking at if the fee increase, and it says this, and so I'll just explain this, whether the fee increase is due to bona fide material unexpected expenses. So what we are looking for is really the rationale backed up by, you know, really rationale that's backed up by, you know, bona fide or actual evidence, if you will, for why those fee increases happened. And so be reaching out to any provider who falls into that category, and we will need to ask you for more information. And what we will be asking you for is that evidence. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we will also be looking at regional benchmarks. And so for those in the third category where, and you know, I think you referenced this, but we are looking about what the average costs are in your area and how, you know, how that relates to your costs. And so, you know, absolutely, if we move back to, you know, I encourage you to apply if you're interested. You know, we will be taking a review of each and every application, to ensure that we administer this fairly and that, you know, we are in touch with you, of course, if we have additional information.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I think this is like a one-on-one question. I should have asked you privately, like calling ministry, but we couldn't get a chance. We all were trying here because we are still, after even raising our fees, in this coming year, we are still below what our community is charging. So, and we don't want to like push the parents. We don't want to charge them like really high. We want to do it slowly because we have never done it. We have always been helping them, and I mean with everything, with our whole heart. And so I just wanted to clear this up. Probably we will receive a call, and we are ready to answer any questions you have. So yeah, thank you so much for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sonia. Moving along to our next question comes from Asan. Please go ahead, Asan.
Anne and Jonathan, thanks for taking the time to address these questions. I'm calling on behalf of my mother. She operates a center, and so she asked me to look at some of these issues with the contract and ask you guys questions on them. I'm a lawyer as well, so some of the stuff is specifically related to the contract. So first of all, the provisions in the contract relating to overpayment, whereby a operator breaches the conditions, say, for example, they increase their rates, provide that any overpayment with regards to the opt-in fees is to be returned, and that actually twice that amount is to be returned. That is, from contractual law perspective, a penalty clause, and unless the government is taking the position that it takes twice the amount to administer such issues, that's not enforceable from a contractual perspective. So you guys may want to look at that and get some advice from justice. The second point that I want to make, or my mom's asked me to make, is that for the past decade, the child care operating funding has not increased, and inflation, according to the Bank of Canada, has been about 20%. So the incentive payment of 10% to deal with the administrative burden that this new process has created and will create doesn't even cover half of this inflationary amount. And I'll just go through these points, and then you guys can address this, because I realize that other people have questions and they want to get to ask them. Thirdly, and really fundamentally, is that the agreement doesn't actually provide any affirmative obligation on the part of the ministry or the government to provide payments in a timely manner. There are lots of obligations on the child care provider, but there are no obligations on the ministry to, for example, provide payments within 3 business days, 5 business days. And it was one thing to go with the child care operating funding, which represented perhaps 10% of monthly revenues, to now probably about 30%, and with obligations related to lease payments, employee and staff payments, and other obligations. It's simply not feasible to opt in at this point, because there is no legal confidence that the government will meet its side of its obligations. And we've had instances in the past where there's been delays in processing, the system has been down, and it's taken upwards of 20 business days to get payments processed. And so, if you guys can speak to that, I would appreciate it. But I think at this point, my mom doesn't feel confident in the ability to get these payments in on time, and for her to be able to continue meeting her obligations with respect to, her creditors and her staff.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That was very concise. So you touched on a lot of things, so I will try to address those. I'll start with the last piece first. And so, we absolutely recognize CCOF has been going since 2003, and many of us have been around for a long time and with that. And so, we have, over the course of that, really what we've done is move the payments up front to be able to address this. We have these payments, at least for the first, absolutely while we get everyone over the hump, we are looking to get them out between 1 and 3 business days. I'm not sure that actually is in the contract. But again, we do have standard times of 3 to 5 business days anyway, that by and large we have been able to maintain, because the CCOF system is an automated system for the enrollment. And so, really what happens is you put your enrollment report in, or providers do, and then it goes into the system, is calculated, and goes out. We have a side-by-side system for the opt-in that works very similar, and so, those payments would also be expedited out. Because, part of the reason, because we wanted to make sure that providers were whole, we wanted to make sure that they certainly weren't out of pocket given the obligations, which is why we moved it up to the 20th of the month. Obviously, if we were to hear that there were instances, where providers put their payments on the 20th, obviously if a provider puts a payment in on the 31st or the 1st, there is no possible way we can get that payment out. So it's where I was referencing earlier in the call, that if there is a concern about the payments, then absolutely providers can get those enrollment reports in immediately.
And if I can just interject just quickly, we submit as a regular course on the first business day of the month with respect to our past agreements over a decade. And there have been instances where, for whatever reason, checks or funds have not been released for 20 business days after that point. And so while your point is taken with regards to payments or submissions on the 20th day of the preceding month, the reality is that from a legal basis, there is no contractual obligation on the ministry and the government to meet these obligations. And so that puts operators like my mother in a very difficult situation where they want to help families get a reduction in their payments and likely qualify for that. However, they can't opt in because they don't have the business certainty that these funds are going to clear. And so while your point is taken that reports made in a timely fashion will be paid, there is no legal obligation. That's something that you should definitely look at, in my opinion.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I hear you. I know that one of the pieces that we often find, and not necessarily your circumstances is that we send out payments, and I know it's, I mean, you've reminded me a bit about there's some batch funding that we had that we're not doing. But what I mean, one of the pieces is for us to guarantee funding. It's not only our funding mechanism. So you know, we can put funding, we can send it out through our mechanism. But you know, we are dealing similar to when we send out forms via email. We're dealing with multiple different systems, and so you know, we have sent funding out where we have banks that hold it. We have various other agreements that our providers have with their banks where they hold funds, etc. Unfortunately, we're only able to be responsible sort of to the end of our agreement. And so, you know, I take your point. I know that there's a lot of other questions on this call, so I do take your point on that. I can say with the initiative, because we need to ensure that providers are whole, is, you know, we are absolutely committed to getting those funds out the door, you know, within, you know, 1 to 3 business days from when we process it. So that's the first thing. But then, so that's the first thing with regard to payments. The other thing with regard to, you know, this and CCOF in general is what I really appreciate hearing is that your mom is interested in this, interested in this option. You know, as far as sort of guarantees, I mean, we certainly work to act in good faith. We work, you know, we have worked, you know, we have our legal team on the contract, you know, supporting us to ensure that it's, you know, up to standard, if you will. I also want to assure you that, you know, it's one of the reasons why we made this initiative optional. So it's opt-in, it is not mandatory. CCOF is not mandatory, and we, you know, we really want to be here to provide that funding for facilities. For the opt-in piece, you know, we are absolutely, you know, having a hard look over the next months as we implement this, because we are committed to ensure stable monthly payments, and we are committed to ensure that providers cannot be impacted at the beginning of the month, because we know that, you know, the operating funding and parent fees are fundamental to being able to sustain quality child care. So, you know, I absolutely hear you, and you know, I'm afraid, you know, I don't necessarily maybe have all the answers that you're looking for, but, you know, I would encourage you, or, you know, to advise your mom that, you know, she can opt in at any time. We will endeavor to provide written clarification where there's some sort of, you know, we need to make clearer some of the certain the rates and the payments and all of that. So I would encourage you to wait for that if you're feeling some discomfort. And so I am just going to stop there, only because we only have 10 minutes left. And
thank you.
But I do want to thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Hassan. Our next question comes from Olga. Please go ahead, Olga.
Hi.
Hi, Olga. You're from Miami.
Hi, my name is Olga, and I'm a healthcare provider. I have multiple locations, and I have BCID number already. My question is, do I have to obtain BCID number for every location right now, or it's okay to stay with one number?
Excellent question. So you're an organization, and you have a BCID. Okay, so
I have already BCID, sorry.
Perfect. I got that.
Yeah, do I have to obtain for right now within your agreement actually for every single one, or it's okay to stay with the same one?
No, we only brought in the option of secondary BCEIDs for multiple facilities if they wished to submit the enrollment reports themselves. And so it's only if you would like each of your facilities to do that. The if they did do that with secondary BCEIDs, of course the payments would roll up still to the organization, because that is the legal relationship we have with you. But absolutely, it's totally your business decision if you choose to have one BCEID and submit all the enrollment reports, or if you'd like to have multiple secondary BCIDs to roll up to pay your organization. So again, it's totally your business decision.
Okay, thank you so much. Can I ask another question, please?
Sure, if it's quick.
Yeah, my question is, if I have already been approved for basic operating funding program, can I already submit my March report and April?
You actually can submit your March, and I was advised today, actually, that April enrollment reports are up, so I think you can actually submit your April as well.
Okay, thank you. Okay. I don't know if I'm eligible to ask one more question.
Well, actually, if I can just leave it, we only have about 8 minutes left, and so if we can get through the queue and you want to queue up again, then, you know, I'm
here. Okay, okay, I can wait. It's okay. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Olga. Our next question comes from Susie. Please go ahead, Susie.
Hi. I'm wondering about... you base, so you're capping our fees and you're basing it off of historical rates, correct?
What we are looking for is what your planned fee increases are, and if they are aligned with your standard business practice of what you have done, you know, then that is eligible.
Okay.
If it's out of line or over and above that, then we will be taking another look at it to, you know, to sort of explore more deeply with you why those fee increases have occurred at which time you've indicated they've occurred.
Okay. So my question is, so based on, like, bigger box daycares, their historical review would be, like, one or two increases per year at more than, like, higher percentages, like 10-15%. So then some of the smaller daycares, we've done increases every 2 years by no more than 4%, and that's our historical review. So based on that, so if it's based on your historical review, then that's more advantageous to those daycares, whereas we've been fair to our families for years and years. So can you explain that?
Yes. So we are introducing this initiative, and, you know, at this point, you know, the focus is to work with providers to stabilize parent fees and, you know, to convert this payment, you know, and not dilute the payment through monthly fee reductions. Where businesses have had, you know, the intent really is to provide immediate relief to parents. And so, at the outset, we are looking to work with providers within the business models that they have established at this time to send out these payments to support fee reductions.
Okay, and then why, you're announcing another change tomorrow, so why are we the ones to find out with the parents? Like, this thing rolled out, and we weren't consulted, we didn't hear anything about it, and it was just rolled out, I found out the same day as one of my daycare families, and it made me look, honestly, like an idiot, because I had no idea that this was rolling out, and one of the parents told me about it, and that makes me look really unprofessional. So I don't know why, if you can tell me why we weren't told, and we aren't going to be told again tomorrow, before the parents are told, before the public is told.
Directly affects us. Thanks for your questions, and I'm not totally clear on what may be announced tomorrow, but I think Anne is clear, so she'll address that aspect of your question. I definitely hear your concern around the communication that the ministry has done around some of government's commitments as it relates to changes to programs. So if we go back to February 20th, that was the date of the provincial budget. That's when government released its three-year budget plan with a commitment to invest $1 billion in childcare over 3 years. At that time, information related to this program change was released to parents and childcare providers, and quickly the ministry began to provide more focused communication related to the child care fee reduction initiative. So we tried to provide the information to everyone at the same time. I do absolutely hear you about could we have done a better job at targeting that communication to you as a provider so that you can respond to your parents, as you said, in the most professional way possible. I think that is something that we're going to learn from. And as we look to make changes, you know, in the child care subsidy program over the next few months, we'll be endeavoring to provide you, a provider, as much information as we can ahead of time. And we will be providing emails to providers directly before posting FAQs on the website, because we want to make sure that we're communicating to you first and foremost. And I'll let Anne address the second point to your question.
So I just want to jump in here, Susie. So you had said, why would parents know tomorrow before we would? And so I just wanted to clarify. Are you talking about whether you're approved or not, or what announcement are you expecting is coming out tomorrow?
No, there's a meeting in Coquitlam where they're announcing something, and it's at 10:30 in the morning in Coquitlam at the Early Childhood Education Center.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Susie.
Yeah.
I believe there is an event that's being hosted by government at a child care facility tomorrow morning in Coquitlam. I don't, at this point, expect any new information to come out. The only thing that we've committed to as a ministry this week is to provide, as I mentioned at the outset, written clarification on the rates and payments related to Schedule C. So I don't know the details of that event tomorrow, but as a seek-off program, that's the only further information that you will receive from us this week, with the exception of communicating to providers when they've been put into base pay and whether they've been accepted to the fee reduction program or whether we need additional information from you.
Okay. And then the last one is, how come we as providers, like when we have our own children in our child care centers, why are we not allowed to claim CPOF for our own children? Like, they're taking up a paying space. So, like, I would save more money sending my children to somebody else's daycare. But that goes, like, the reason I opened the daycare is so that I, as a woman, could get back into the workforce.
Hi, Susie. Sorry about that. And so so what we've done is, so similar, and I mean, this is still open in our FAQ, is, you know, we're aware, so, you know, in cases where a child is enrolled in a facility that is not their own, that then the facility is eligible to receive the fee reduction. And so as long as the parent is not directly providing care for the child.
Well, yeah, but that's how, like, we are able to get back into the workforce by, say, opening up a multi-age child care center so that we can have our children with us. So why are we being penalized for that? Like, by not being allowed to claim your fees. But if we had somebody else's child in care, we'd be able to claim for that. Like, how is that fair?
Sorry, we're just looking to provide you a clearer response. Sorry about this. So we're just referencing our various legislative acts. You know, we know that generally child care is defined as care provided by someone other than a parent. And so, you know, part of where I was referencing earlier, if it's a facility, you know, where it's not the parent providing, you know, the direct care, then it applies. But where it is direct care, the province does not pay for parents to take care of their children, and so that's where that's where it would fall outside this initiative.
So basically, you should send them to somebody else's child care then, because they're taking up a space and you're losing money from CPOF by having your own children there. So, but like, how is that good for women getting back into the workplace?
And I hear you. So the intent of this initiative is to be able to, you know, fund a space, and so then the fee would then go to the parent.
Right, but like when your children are in your daycare, they're taking up a space or two spaces.
So, it's just that, you know, in essence, you'd be paying yourself for the space. So it's just, it's sort of just that sort of nuance there. And, sorry, I just have to say that we're a minute over. So, you know, I'm okay to say a little bit if, you know, you're okay to say a couple of minutes? Okay. 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 Thank you for your question, Susie.
Thank you. We have time for one more question.
Certainly.
Our next question is from Amanda. Please go ahead, Amanda.
Hi. You guys have been referencing to written confirmation that we should be receiving in regards to the numbers that weren't clearly stated. I'm just wondering if that's going to come in a legally binding form, or is it going to be another FAQ?
The information will not come to providers through an updated FAQ, although we will be looking to update our FAQs on a number of questions. Sorry, it's Jonathan speaking here, where we can provide some additional clarity as we've gone through the information calls. But the written confirmation that will come this week will be an official document from the ministry.
So it will be like something like an addendum or whatever, so that we can actually like utilize that as part of our contract, just because the numbers in it don't, like, it's not reflective of what's in the FAQ.
It will be a document that we will provide, that will provide the best written assurance that we can to ensure there's clarity around the rates that are currently in Schedule C.
Okay.
Good. All right.
Sorry, did you have another question, Amanda?
Well, Amanda just left the queue.
Good. Well, it's 8:33, and so I think we'll end this. We want to thank you for spending time with us this evening, and again, you know, please give us a call if you have questions. 1-888-338-6622, option 2. Again, 1-888-338-6622, option 2. A reminder that the deadline that was today has been extended to apply, so you are able to opt in any time for April, extended to April 20th. So please contact us if you have questions, and I thank you again for spending the evening with us.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes the Child Care Operating Funding 2018-2019 program changes. Thank you for your participation and have a nice day.